We did it back in the 70s.
And he's just like, just have some sugar and some OJ, and I'm not working today, kids.
It's part of a complete breakfast.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know.
Don't just eat the sugary cereal. Of course, that's the only thing you got, was the sugary cereal.
I bet you there's something out here, top 10 sugary cereals.
Here's some orange juice, and stop bothering me. It was...
Here's the top 10.
Super Sugar Crisp.
Sugar
was like the bigger one. Then there was Sugar Pops.
There's Apple Jacks, Cocoa Puffs, Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, I ate all those.
Of course, you have the Count Chocula. That was a big one.
I ate all of those.
And then you had the Frankenberry, the Trix. How can we forget Trix?
Yep.
That was a great one. Captain Crunch, Corn Pops, Honey Nut Cheerios. Some of those have got to be canceled now, right?
I had to have Crunch Berries in my Captain Crunch.
Is Captain Crunch still around?
Yeah, Captain Crunch is going strong.
Yeah, he's doing okay. How about the Trix Rabbit? He was kind of a whore, wasn't he?
Trix is still around.
Yeah, he was kind of a whore. The Trix Bunny.
He just wanted some tricks.
Yeah, but wasn't he like a real jackass about it?
He'd do anything for some.
That's what I mean. He was like the early version of what would you do for a Klondike bar? I'd shave my head.
Yeah.
The Trix guy would do anything for the cereal, and the kids never gave it to him. I always felt kind of bad for him.
It's WMFO Medford. I think we're supposed to say that.
Yeah, yeah. You want to read a PSA?
Do you want me to read a PSA?
Sure. Why not?
I got the big book of PSAs over here.
Yeah, that almost explains why the mics are broken.
I just knocked my headphones offline picking this up.
With that giant PSA book that hasn't been changed out for 10 years. I've thrown a couple of new ones in there.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control's top tip for fending off the flu, coronavirus, and colds.
Mm-hmm. What would it be?
Is to wash your hands.
Oh, boy.
To protect yourself, you should wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, especially after going to the bathroom, before eating, and after blowing your nose, coughing, or sneezing.
Number one or number two.
The CDC also advises avoiding touching your eyes, nose, and mouth.
Or yourself.
Unless you've just washed your hands.
Yeah, I always wash up. I like to freshen up before I do.
Covering any cough or sneeze you have with the tissue, then throwing the tissue in the trash, avoiding close contact with people who are sick, and finally, if you do get sick, staying home so you don't infect others.
Mm.
A public health message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio.
You know what didn't come back? The hanky that much. Like, people had the handkerchief. The handkerchief in your back pocket was for the ladies. And your front pocket, if you were a gentleman, it was for you.
No, the front pocket was for the ladies, and the back pocket was for you.
Back pocket was for the ladies.
No, the front pocket's for the ladies.
You think so?
Yeah.
No, I think the back pocket's for the ladies.
Because that's the one that is clean. That's the one that's, like, sitting there on display.
It's like it's on your bum or your
And if a lady needed a handkerchief, you pull it out of that little pocket and say,
I think it's
here
the
you
back.
Go, m'lady.
Let me look it up. We got to look it up.
No, it's a trust me.
It says it's a form of kerchief, a bandana, a hemmed... modern usage.
I've seen enough
pocket squares.
I've seen enough movies with suave guys from the 70s to know that one up front is the one you give the ladies.
Here I am taking my handkerchief out of the back pocket from my ass and giving it to the ladies. No wonder they didn't want it.
That's why you're not. Yeah, that's why the ladies are like, "What is this?"
Yeah,
we don't want your used handkerchief.
What is this? It's like this is something that this is just a thing I pulled from my bum, and I want you to put it up to your nose.
That was in your back pocket. Where else has it been?
Yeah. King of England, King Richard III, he was 1377 to 1399, 22 years old, widely believed to have invented the cloth handkerchief.
Wow.
After surviving documents written by his courtiers described his use of sticking square pieces of cloth in his face to wipe his nose.
Nice.
Yeah. And a handkerchief is an important plot device in the play Othello. So it's been around for a long time. But, it's not saying front or back here.
Yeah, no.
I have to look it up.
It's the front one.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think it's the back one.
Could you picture James Bond pulling a...
I used to be very debonair, and I'd pull things from my backside to give to the ladies.
The ladies don't want that.
Yeah.
They want the one in front that they can see. You're doing it wrong.
I don't know. It explains a lot.
Yeah.
Explains my problems with dating over the years.
It does. It does. They're like, wait, what? Why are you keeping the one in the front and giving me the one in the back?
Yeah. Front pocket handkerchief.
It's like making her walk in through the back door. It's like, why am I walking in through the back door?
Yeah.
Who don't you want seeing me coming through your front door?
Next time I go to a wedding, I'm just going to have handkerchiefs everywhere. I'm just going to be like, here's one. I got one in my front, my back. There's one up top. There's one hidden under my cap.
Do the magician thing where you tug on it and they just keep coming out forever.
Yeah. The handkerchief is for blow, and it goes in your back or front pants pocket or inside your jacket, lower pockets or inside pockets. These guys don't know. They're just like, put it wherever there's a pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing up front is supposed to be a pocket square, but it started out... Now, look at this guy.
Yeah, the pocket square is nice. This guy, it looks like he's got a bouquet of flowers outside of his...
Yeah, he's got like that little sailor hat you made out of newspaper when you were a kid in there.
See, this one I kind of like.
Yeah.
That one, the second one here, you know, business. This guy, he's got it in his nose. He's got a nice Gucci watch on. He's all right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's odd because it's still stylish. But at the same time, who wants boogies everywhere?
Well, you're not supposed to use it.
You think? I bet you people used it for other things, too, instead of your nose.
Oh, probably.
Sure.
You can use it to wipe your mouth.
Like tobacco
or your
bum or a baby's bum.
Well, I don't know if you're doing that with it. But
if you're a dad and you needed to hurt something.
You're not putting it back in your pocket.
You're at
after
the zoo
that.
Or something. You're like,
I'm a
dad. God. The kid's had an accident. What are you going to do?
Let's touch the kid's butt. It's going in the trash.
I'd rather use the handkerchief than anything else.
Well,
I'm like, I'll take off my T-shirt.
Handkerchiefs cost money.
Yeah. I don't know. You don't want to get caught with your kid without anything on to wipe his bum.
Yeah, this is very true.
Oh, man. Let me play a little bit more from the 80s here. I got Robillard on here. I got the Kool-Aid Man. And I got another thing. And then we have Dick Van Dyke talking about one of the afternoon shows on WLVI that was always there, the Brady Bunch. We'll be back in a moment. It is What Is This on WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts.
Kool-Aid presents America's number one relief pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's Kool-Aid Man.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Today's baseball tip from Kool-Aid Man is about the curveball, a hitter's nightmare. To throw the curveball, a pitcher spins the ball as he releases it, and that makes it curve away from or into the hitter. Next time you watch a game, look for a curveball. Tune in next week for another baseball tip from Kool-Aid Man.
When you get up and go, has got up and gone. Turn yourself back on.
Take five.
Take five. Five Alive. Take five. Five Alive.
Snow Crop Five Alive. Five delicious fruits. Tangerine, grapefruit, lemon, lime, and orange make one refreshing taste.
Take five. Five Alive. Take five.
Five Alive, the five fruit refresher.
Greetings, Earthlings! I'm Robillard. I'm from Mars, and I eat all kinds of candy bars. What is this? Some Earth fruit? Mmm, it is good. Mmm, it's better than good. It's yummy and not bad. Oh, wait till I tell the other Martians about this. By only eating candy bars, we don't know what we've missed.
A good food message from...
Brady Bunch was one of the bigger families on television. Three girls and three boys. A show full of kids, about kids, four kids. This is the Brady Bunch associate producer, Lloyd Schwartz.
We looked at the kids as if they were kids, always, and what do kids do?
This is Maureen McCormick. She played Marcia Brady.
All the teen angst and all the changing hormones, those were all out there for everyone to see.
There were six kids, and they were 1 year apart, each of them. And so what we always would do is, on any particular episode, we would focus on one child. Now, as you get older, of course, your stories would, if you're one of the older kids, would go toward dating.
And a dating dilemma figures into this classic Brady episode, which first aired on February 9th, 1973. Pretty, popular Marcia Brady eagerly accepts an invite to the dance by her dream date, Doug Simpson.
I was wondering if you'd like to go to a dance with me on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Great.
But going out with hotshot Doug means that Marcia has to break her date with nice guy, Charlie.
And I was talking with Greg and said, you know, what should I do? He said, well, why don't you say something suddenly came up?
Charlie, I have to break our date.
You do? Gee, I hope nothing's wrong.
No, it's just that something suddenly came up.
Oh, well, I'm sure sorry.
So am I, but...
Well, maybe we can make it some other time, huh?
Sure.
But Marcia gets her comeuppance when an overthrown football plunks her in the nose, swelling her proboscis to twice its size.
Hey, you guys.
Oh, my nose!
Once he gets a load of Marcia's swollen schnoz, Doug drops her like a hot potato, leaving Marcia time to brood on her teenage tragedy.
Oh, I'll never forget that football game as long as I live. Hey, you guys.
Oh, my nose! Oh, my nose!
When shooting this memorable scene, the grave responsibility of smacking Marcia's nose with the football fell to then-associate producer Lloyd Schwartz.
There was no such thing as a Nerf football. I mean, Nerf foot things hadn't been invented yet, but they had this football that was like that.
I was actually so freaked out because at first when they brought it out, I thought it was a real football because it looked like a real football.
Irving and Joe were the two older men, prop men, and they kept missing her. And because they weren't exactly football players. And I was only 20-something at the time. And I said, Marcia, Maureen, stand over there. And I hit her with the ball. It was one shot, and I hit her. That was, I don't know, 30-something years ago. And I hate to say it, but that might be my biggest claim to fame. I mean, it certainly gets the most reaction. What have you done in your life? Well, I hit Marcia with the ball. Yeah. Oh, my nose.
Sure enough, Marcia's nose returns to normal, and nice guy Charlie gets an apology and a date.
I played a dirty trick on you.
Dirty trick?
I broke my date that I had with you for Saturday because Doug Simpson asked me out for the same night. That's something that suddenly came up.
You're right. It was a dirty trick.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Marcia, in some way, paralleled his life because she became someone who wasn't perfect. And then she saw Charlie for who he was. So it's really like the well-made play. And I think guys who would either lust after or idealize Marcia Brady saw that they maybe had a chance. And then we love seeing vanity punctured and the football player getting his just desserts too. So I think it was really a classic episode because it did what Brady always tried to do, which was teach a little lesson.
All's well that ends well. And in the world of the Brady Bunch, it always ends well.
Now look, fellas, Marcia, Jan, and Cindy are all part of our family.
Here's the story of sitcom life.
Greg's gonna be famous.
Mike's the husband.
Greg, I want to see you in my den.
Carol's the wife.
I think kids today are too grown up to get involved in such childish behavior.
TV's favorite family, Florence Henderson has personality.
Greg.
Peter, Bobby, Greg, Marcia, Cindy, Jan. Alice got her meat from Butcher Sam. They drive me Brady. Ooh, ooh. Three boys, three girls. Drag me Brady, the youngest one in curls.
Alice, could you get us some tea, please?
Tea and cookies coming right up. The next question is, why are you running a motel for goats?
Well, it's a special goat.
You wait till your mother finds out.
The Brady Girls. I'm obsessed. Marcia's got a nice pair of sisters.
Greg!
They drive me Brady. Ooh, ooh. A groovy bunch.
As Guns and Moses, an early Richard Cheese there in that one.
Let me just tell you, if you want to lust after Marcia Brady, let me point you toward a film called Skate Town USA.
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever seen Skate Town USA?
No, is she in it? Maureen McCormick?
Oh, my God, is she in it?
Really?
Stone to the gills.
Oh, no kidding, huh?
And I believe she has a romantic scene with either Scott Baio or Ron Palillo. I can't remember which one of them it is.
Horshack
is in it.
Either
one of them is a...
Says it's 1979.
Yeah, either one of them
Disco.
Is a hysterical pairing.
Yeah.
It's the first Patrick Swayze movie ever.
Right, roller disco movie. I have seen this a long time ago.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, Ruth Buzzy's in it.
It's great.
Yeah, nice.
This is worth tracking down and watching.
Patrick Swayze is the lead role. His name is Ace. It's his first movie appearance. And Billy Barty is in it as well.
Billy Barty is in it.
And Playboy centerfold
Dorothy
Stratton.
Dorothy Stratton, star 80, and one of her roles is in this.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's some pretty heavy talent there.
Dorothy Stratton is basically there to wave her chest around.
Yeah.
As, you know, Playboy models will do.
Yeah. That's all right.
There's really no plot to it. It's just roller skating and the goings on at this roller disco.
The winning prize is $1,000 in a moped.
Yeah, but it's really not. Yeah, there's some roller disco at the end of it, but mostly it's just like hijinks around the roller disco.
And they're just kind of looking at each other like somebody's at the soda machine.
Yeah.
Getting a plastic cup, looking around.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Swayze goes by with the Playboy model.
It's one of these films that you just got to see because it's just crazy.
Murray Langston's in it too.
It's a
from
little
Jaws, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, the unknown comic Murray Langston.
It's
right.
A little bit like Thank God It's Friday. If you've seen that film,
sure. That was the first movie I saw on HBO.
Yeah,
yeah. My friend had HBO in Woburn when I lived there in '79, and I went over his house. HBO used to come on at like 4 o'clock at night, only on like Friday and Saturdays. And it would go from like 4 to 2 a.m. And Thank God It's Friday was their feature film. They were excited to have that on.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it, and I'm like, that was pretty good. And the guy falls through the Cadillac roof. That's what I remember. And I was about 8 years old, and I'm like, that was awesome watching a movie at home.
If you like that, you'll love this. And as you watch it, it's painfully obvious that everybody in the film is stoned out of their mind.
Wow. Great soundtrack, too. You got Earth, Wind, and Fire, the Jacksons.
Oh, yeah.
John Sebastian.
Yeah.
From Welcome Back, Carter.
It's
Dave Mason. Wow.
It's entertaining as hell. This is
Stones cover, Under My Thumb.
This is a classic Friday night, have some beers, watch it kind of movie.
In the background, Richard Cheese, years later, decided to do a loungeified version of the Brady Bunch.
By the way, did you... we were going to talk about The Last of Us.
Yes, I did watch the first 3 episodes.
So,
I'm on number 4.
Did
you watch it?
So for Lent, we gave up HBO Max.
Oh.
But I did make it halfway through episode 6.
Oh, you're further than me then.
And I'm happy at where I left it because I can just imagine.
Oh, you must have watched all of them in a row.
Happy ending for everybody, and we'll go off into the sunset.
Oh, is that what happens in episode 6?
No, but at the point where I turned off episode 6 at 1:30 in the morning last night was the last night we had HBO.
Oh.
Because it's Shrove Tuesday, and then you got to start Lent.
Yeah.
So Lent started, you know, with no HBO Max. That's what we're giving up.
No.
What do you think?
I like it. I mean, episode 3 kind of turned me off a little bit, and then it turned around on me, and I'm like, does it have to be woke? And I'm like, all right, it's good enough. It's good. I enjoy it. I don't think it's great, I'm picturing everything Pedro Pascal does as the Mandalorian
because he's playing the Mandalorian.
He's the Mandalorian with a teenager instead of Grogu.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where I am on it. It's good. It's not great. I think parts of it are pretty creepy, but I'm getting to the point too where it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of done with pandemic stuff. I'm just kind of sick of it.
Yeah,
you know?
This one's, I mean, I have the disadvantage of having played the game and I know where the story goes. Yeah. So
finished the game too. Yeah.
I know a lot of these beats. Now, the interesting thing about episode 3 is that you never actually see that character in the game.
Yeah, they switch it up, I think.
So everything that they did for episode 3 was sort of character building. I loved episode 3.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
You know,
I didn't think it was great.
Because I would
say it was good.
I would say if you're gonna give an Emmy Award to an episode in that show so far, that's the one. Because they tell an entire love story. And it's a love story that could only sort of happen in this situation.
Yeah.
And
I don't think it's that deep, though.
It's not deep, but they give you all the nuances of it.
Yeah.
You know, and you get that tension of the couple that's been together for a long time, just sort of stuck together. And one of them wants to go in a different direction, and the other one is happy where he is, and one of them's dragging the other one into everything.
Yeah.
And it's I like that about it. And it's a gay couple.
Sure is.
And we talk about, you know, oh, representation this and representation that. The thing that I liked about the episode is that it's just presented as the story.
Yeah.
Nobody's dancing around and jumping up and down saying, look, gay people,
people. But when they're eating the strawberries, come on. They're eating the strawberries together.
That's a nice moment.
It's gay.
It's a nice moment. There's way gayer stuff before the strawberries. There's the whole thing with the piano.
It's like, you ever been with a girl? Well, you gonna be with a boy?
Yeah.
Here you go, buddy.
But no, in the same way that I liked the gay couple in Halloween Kills.
See, they were good. I enjoyed them.
And thought that was really well done, where you just present these characters and say, yes, this is life. This is a gay couple.
But
they did that
being
here.
Gay was secondary. And I think in this movie, they weren't. I think in that episode, they weren't secondary. It's like it was a conscious choice to make them a gay couple versus a man and a woman.
It is a conscious choice. You know? But it's also, if you think about it and you think about the character that Bill is.
Mm. Gay Bill.
Gay Bill.
Yeah.
Gay Bill has never been comfortable with himself.
Yeah.
He's never acted on his romantic feelings with anybody.
Yeah.
He's carrying a lot of pain.
Sure.
And in this situation, he has the opportunity to live a full life.
You know what,
and
though?
And we see that transformation in him. We see what love does for him.
But this other guy comes in, all right? The other gay guy?
Gay Chris.
Gay Chris comes in. Is it Chris? That's what his name was?
Yeah, he's Chris. Right.
I don't know. Maybe I shut that off. But he comes in, and all of a sudden, he's trying to get to Boston. And he's lost everybody. There's no background on his story at all. There's no time for it.
Yeah, he gets one line where they came from Baltimore and there were 10 of us.
But it also, it's, he's it. To me, it's somebody who is just lucky that they've survived this far because he has no plan.
Yeah.
And he kind of takes advantage of Gay Bill and Gay Bill's, nice little place he set up.
I think
Bill is lonely, but Gay Chris takes advantage of Gay Bill. And there's a dynamic there that switches over the time.
I think you can read it that way.
Yep.
But I don't think that's ever the intent. I don't think that's where Chris starts.
Gay Chris.
I think Gay Chris starts with the idea that I'll stop here, I'll have a shower, I'll move on to Boston.
Maybe give him a little
I don't even think that's part of it. I think when he realizes
it's who, like, thanks for dinner, buddy.
I think when he realizes who Bill is, he finds Bill attractive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the end of the world. You're wandering through the wilderness and you discover a virgin living in a beautiful house.
Gay Bill, yeah.
Who can cook, who's growing their own food, can play music, got electricity.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, and it's a virgin?
Yeah.
It's sort of like the male fantasy in that regard.
The gay man.
And I think Chris might be
I'm good.
maybe starts out exploiting that a little bit.
Straight Chris would have been moving on to Boston.
Yeah, be but like, at the same time,
thanks for the shower. See you later.
I the way that it plays out is touching.
It was good.
The way it plays out really is touching.
I'm joking about it, but it was good. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I enjoyed it. I'd watch that episode again just for the gay sex.
You'll see as you'll see as you get deeper into this.
Yeah.
The trap that the show kind of falls into.
I hope they bring him back.
Yeah. Is very evident in that episode.
Yeah.
Where they've sort of become an anthology, like The Fugitive, like The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we've got our people on the road, and today, you know, we meet the couple that's doomed, and tomorrow we go to the town where things aren't quite as they seem, you know, and next we're going to go to the town where somebody has a problem and our heroes are in danger.
Sure.
And it's sort of like character story of the week.
Yeah.
That we've seen. This is one of the problems with it. It was a problem with the game as well. There are no new ideas here other than the source of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only new idea in this whole thing.
Yeah, and the pandemic is basically vegetation that's eaten out everybody's brains, right? Like mushrooms are become conscious, yeah, and are taking over everybody.
Everything else is something you've seen before somewhere else.
Yeah.
But it's done pretty darn well here.
It's good. It's not great, you know? I still think, you know, the first season of The Walking Dead's phenomenal,
yes,
and that just fell apart.
Yeah.
But it's a Walking Dead first season level to me now.
No.
It's entertaining enough.
But it aspires to be up there, and in its best moments, I think it gets there.
And there's something about the little girl that's kind of annoying me. You know, it's just like, and I think this is part of 2023 and me being who I am as a middle-aged guy. It's just like, girl, like this girl's like, what, 12? What is she, 13?
She's 14.
She's supposed to be in the video game. What is she?
She's
supposed
to be 14 in the video game.
She's supposed to be younger, I thought.
She's 14.
Okay. So here she is swearing and yelling at this guy,
yeah,
and you know, and you see that he's lost his kid years ago, but it's like, you know what? 20 years of like killing people and living and surviving, he wouldn't put up with nearly the amount of crap that she's throwing at him. I know it's for comic relief and stuff, but I'm just like, oh my God, can somebody just throw a muzzle on her for a while?
And, yeah.
You know, throw her in a well for a half hour or,
yeah,
something. Just shut her up. You know, she's annoying to me, but I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch
is,
the rest of it.
But she starts out annoying, and she also...
Oh, she grows, I know.
She grows.
In the game, too, the same.
Yeah.
But they are a fun couple as time goes on.
Yeah.
So it is worth watching.
And you start to see as it goes on that she is capable, and she does, you know, all of the freshness and the swearing and the rest of it is really just a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And once that starts to break down, it gets interesting. But... The thing that I keep thinking about when I'm watching it is, here's Din Djarin, you know,
right,
where's
exactly,
where's Baby
time.
Yoda?
I mean, everything he's saying to her is pretty much from The Mandalorian, too.
The dialogue.
It's like, and, no, you don't get a gun.
And the delivery,
yeah,
as you get a little deeper into it,
yeah,
gets more and more Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And you could close your eyes, put lines from those two shows side by side, and not tell which is which.
Yeah. I have something. We're going to take a radical left turn here. And we talked about Python a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I pulled out the new Musical Express, Tiny Black Round Thing. Do you remember that? From 1975.
My gosh. That's
live
going,
in Drury Lane.
Yeah, it's going way back.
Michael Palin, who's from Monty Python, decided to do some audio, some original audio for that. So I pulled that together, and I got a few minutes of that on there. As well as a remix version of Here Comes Another One, if you are familiar with that from Monty Python, which, interestingly enough, is not sung by a member of Monty Python, which I never actually knew that. Terry Jones wrote it. It's not Neil Innes either.
Oh, it's Neil Innes. It's not Neil Innes.
And it's another guy that was like in their troupe.
Fred Tomlinson?
That worked with him and Eric Idle when they were producing the record in like 1980. Oh. So I got a couple of those. And
it's not even Fred Tomlinson.
Let's listen to these two, and we will be right back. It is What Is This on WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. And this is from 1975, and this is some rare Monty Python. Enjoy.
This tiny black round thing comes to you with the compliments of New Musical Express. In the interests of promoting world peace and increasing mutual understanding between the nations of the free world. It is not in any way an attempt to boost sales of the paper in a year of increasing competition, or a cheap gimmick to attract people away from Disc or Melody Maker. The record is introduced personally by the head of New Musical Express Limited.
Good evening! First, take the record, then put it on the gramophone, then hit it with a needle, hit it, go on, play, play. Oh, I like being head of New Musical Express. I like it, and I got my own chair and the table which I hit. It's very famous.
This record comes to you entirely free with New Musical Express, the hairspray that really cares for your hair. Mends split ends, cures athlete's foot, and leaves your hair looking fresh, vital, and with a thin white scum on top. I'm terribly sorry, I beg your pardon. This record comes to you entirely free with New Musical Express, the pop paper that keeps you up to date with the latest grocery bargains. Toilet rolls are down to £3, or £4 new. Doggo hair conditioner, down to 54p, leaves your spaniel looking cleaner, fresher, and with a thin white scum on top. I'm sorry, I normally do the kind of mainly kind of consumer-orientated... This record comes to you entirely free with New Musical Express, the paper which you can really wrap things up in. Old Spaniels, regurgitated curry, New Musical Express, the strongest and most absorbent pop paper in Britain today. What the press have said about Monty Python's Tiny Black Round Thing. An absolute smasher, New Musical Express. A stunning record full of originality, wit, and perceptive brilliance, New Musical Express. Rubbish, the Daily Sun. Makes lettuce look interesting, the Rangoon Morning Examiner. Medically unsuitable, the Calcutta Ladies Weekly. Made me really squeak, the Hamster and Furry Rodent Weekly. Definitely not a gimmick, New Musical Express. Yes, this is the record you must hear. Recorded live in the presence of Her Royal Highness, the Dummy Princess Margaret, on the stage of the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, just next door to Alf's Cafe in Russell Street, where you can enjoy a cup of tea and a roll for 20p. There are clean toilets which cater for your every need. And Alf himself will be pleased to brush your hair or simply adjust your dress. Yes, if you're taken short in the West End, then why not visit Alf's, where hospitality and hygiene go hand in hand.
Here comes another one. Here it comes again. Here comes another one. When will it ever end? I don't know whatever it is. I've not seen one before. But here comes another one. And here comes a bunch of them. Here comes another one. Thank God I'm not having lunch room.
That's it, is it?
Obviously, it would be better with a full orchestra.
Yes. Yes, I suppose it would.
Here comes another one. Here comes again. Here comes another one. When will we ever end?
Here comes another one. Another one, when will it ever end?
Here comes another one.
Hello, this is James Earl Jones for Social Security, welcoming you to Genius on the Black Side. time was when black singers, composers, and musicians had to struggle in the backwaters. Now, in the concert halls, on Broadway stages, and on Hollywood sets, they're right up there, front and center. And right up front, I'd like to invite you to listen to a genuine example of genius on the black side. Chaka Khan is taking off in 1979 as the hot new black female vocalist. Chaka's career began at the age of 16 when she first performed in Chicago supper clubs, singing jazz, rock, and rhythm and blues. In 1972, she joined up with a group called Rufus, and as lead singer for that group, her distinctive voice became familiar to fans all over the world. Chaka will sing for us in a moment after this from Social Security. A disabling illness or accident can happen to anyone, young or old. With such a disability, there's always a great strain on the family budget. And that's where your Social Security protection comes in. If you've worked long enough in a job covered by Social Security, and you're so seriously disabled that you can't work for a year or more, you may be able to get monthly Social Security disability payments. There's a 5-month waiting period, with the first payment for the 6th full month of disability. If you're eligible for these payments, your dependents will also get monthly checks. The younger you are when you become disabled, the less Social Security credit you need. You'll also get Medicare protection if you get Social Security disability benefits for 2 years. For more information, write or call any Social Security office. Someone there will be glad to help you. A big hit for Chaka Khan in 1978, I'm Every Woman. Talented Chaka Khan singing I'm Every Woman. Well, once again, it's time to go. And once again, it's time to remind you that you must apply for Social Security benefits. They do not come automatically. If you have any questions, just visit or call any Social Security office. They'll be glad to help you. Until next time, when we pay tribute to another genius on the black side, this is James Earl Jones saying so long.
I'd like to say is that I don't live in a prison and I'm not afraid of anything. I haven't built any walls around myself. I'm just like anyone else. I need love and water. And I don't really consider myself a superstar. I live in a small town and I always will. Because I can walk around and be me. And that's all I want to be. That's all I ever tried to be.
How cool is that? It's Prince doing Apollonia, and this one in the background is Prince doing the Bangles.
See, he
wrote these.
He was doing the Bangles. He was doing Sheena Easton. He was doing everything. See, you're talking about the American Dream. I think Prince
Sugar had... Wall, Sheena Easton, he wrote that.
Prince had the American Dream. I'm just walking around in a small town because I can be myself.
And he had his handkerchief in his back pocket.
Didn't need any tigers.
Yeah.
Right? Didn't need to be partying out with his friends every single night. Just walking around a small town. We can be himself.
Yeah.
I don't think the tiger guy was being himself.
Yeah.
I don't think that's who he was. I think he was trying to impress somebody.
We were chatting.
Maybe the Tigers.
As that was playing, we were chatting about how Prince is like 11 years old on the news and how cool it is because there was really no record of us being 70s children. Nobody was taking pictures of us.
No.
You know, and it's just like you had to set up these giant cameras and lighting and everything for a production. And like people were flipping out. They're like, that's Prince. It's cool. It was so neat. And it's like, there's, if you want to search it there, you can find interview of Prince talking about a bunch of teachers on a school strike in Minneapolis in like 1970, I think.
I think it's up on the YouTubes now.
Yeah.
Everything's up on the YouTubes.
It's pretty cool when you get to see like some of his childhood friends, and when guy's like, that's Prince, he starts flipping out. He's like, that's great. And I love the Norm McDonald later. He's like, my grandfather, there'd be one picture of him and he'd be all angry. And he's like, I have to feed these hogs. And nowadays, you know, kids are just like teenagers, like, hey, you want to see 10,000 pictures of my grandfather?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like all of a sudden everybody's recording everything.
Oh, how did these pictures of my penis get in there? Wait, let me swipe past.
And not only one or two, but 37 of them.
Yeah.
Because you did a burst.
Yeah.
Let's do a burst. And take a whole bunch of photos of it.
Hey, if I post this on Facebook, it looks 3D.
I was talking to my doctor. And it's just like we were chatting, you know, and we gab a little bit, you know, and I've known him for about 25 years. And I'm like, I'm like, what's some of the weirdest stuff? I'm like, you got to be seeing all kinds of phone stuff all the time. He's like, you can't even imagine some of the stuff people show me on their phones.
Oh, God.
And I'm just like, do you tell him to delete it afterwards? He's like, it's already out there. It's never going away. And I'm like, you're right.
Well, we had one of those a couple of years ago, or a year ago, where Bobby had like a really bad rash.
Yeah, yeah.
And the pediatrician was like, send us a picture.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm like, I don't think we can do that. Like, I think the FBI is going to come if we send that picture.
Yeah.
So we had to go.
Right, especially if it's like on a bottom or something. Right.
We had to go in like really close.
That's what sucks about now, too. It's just ridiculous. You're a parent and you're concerned about your kid, and that can be used against you.
Yeah, I don't.
So ridiculous.
I don't want someone knocking on the door saying, let's talk about the photos that you're sharing on the internet.
It's of course.
What? I said that to my doctor. Isn't that protected?
Yeah. Oh, I read a little bit more during a little break there about the handkerchief front and back. I couldn't find much, but they said the bandana in the 70s and 80s in the back pocket, you know what that represented?
Oh, yeah.
Gay sex.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And the color.
So gay Bill from Last Is Us would have had a bandana in his back pocket in the 70s or 80s.
Color of the bandana offered some clues about the sort of things you were into.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't say that on the internet.
There's a whole color code with the bandana.
You're looking at the dark web, I think.
You know what else was a signal in the 1970s?
What's that? A wink? A little wink?
Was if you wore your keys on your belt.
Yeah, I heard something like that. If you wore them like a certain way or something, right?
So that's led to speculation that Mr. Keys in...
Like the janitor?
No, Mr. Keys in E.T.
Mr. Keys is
actually a gay man.
Really?
Yeah, because he's walking around with the keys on his belt.
Which one's Mr. Keys? Is he the government man?
He's the leader of the government men. Peter Coyote plays him.
Oh, yeah.
But that's gay men would have recognized that as a symbol that, hey...
I think Spielberg's a closet.
I go
gay
in that direction.
That's my own working theory.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think Spielberg and Lucas have been at it with each other for years.
Wow.
That's my working theory.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. We got to look at some of those old 70s footage and see if they're wearing bandanas
Harrison
in their bum-bum.
Harrison Ford has his shirt off a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, but I think he's a man's man. He's not into men, but the other men are into him.
Yeah,
and
that's
why
he's
in all the movies.
Like, the directors are like...
Harrison, take off your shirt.
Harrison, take your shirt off again.
Yeah, and he's like, what, like this?
Can you just unbutton this all the way, Harrison? That's better.
Should I put on a fedora?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's Indiana Jones. There he is. They're like, yeah, we were dreaming it up. Like, I like when George Lucas talks about all of his, like... ideas and stuff. It's like now. It's like you were like sitting there in a YMCA, you know, a bunch of towels around them. Like, hey, Harrison, take your towel down.
Yeah.
You could be Indiana Jones. That's a new character.
It's
imagine going without a towel.
It's like this.
Put
how
on a fedora hat. That's Indiana Jones.
This is how you know that Ian Fleming was a heterosexual. Because James Bond always has a suit on, unless there's a woman in the room, and then suddenly his clothes
are hairy.
Off.
Yeah, then you got that hairy chest.
Then it's like, hey, you know, let me take this towel off.
He gets feral.
Yeah.
In the background, Glamorous Life, Prince
plus,
doing Sheila E.
Plus, I don't think a guy that comes up with names like Octopussy and Truly Scrumptious. Although, you know, maybe.
Yeah. A lot of vagina in Austin Powers. Miss Vagina. Yeah, those are great, the Austin Powers movies.
Those are good movies.
Yeah.
Those are fun.
I think Mike Myers wouldn't get away with that now. I don't know if I'm going to get away with it on WMFO. It was F-A-G-I-N-A. Vagina.
Do the cancelers listen to us? I think we bore them in the first 5 minutes.
You know what? They tune in for about the 20 seconds where I say something, like while they're filtering through on that cost station. Then they're like, I'm calling the authorities.
Yes.
I don't like that angry afternoon man. Did I tell you that somebody went into my WMFO profile and they changed the wording on my DJ profile?
Wow, no, you did not.
Instead of wise-ass comedy, it said wizened comedy.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Huh.
Yeah. So somebody with the powers at WMFO went in and did that. I have an idea who did it.
I don't think of you as wizened.
I know. And it's like, that's a person who don't know me.
Is it wizened or wizened?
Well, wizened.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to give it much credit.
Yeah.
So I changed it back.
Yeah,
and I changed my profile up. But I'm like, somebody in power should not be re-editing a DJ profile.
You're being censored.
For a community member who's
That's right.
been here since 2008 and done the Lord's work here, I think.
You're being censored.
Done a little bit of the Lord's work.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't need some little, you know.
We predate cancel
culture. Little jackass doing that. Yeah. In the background is Kim Basinger. Listen to this.
Oh, yeah.
When he was doing Kim Basinger.
Can we play this?
It's awful. Listen to her. She's awful.
Oh, it's them singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How awful is she? He's like, come over, Kim, and let's sing a song.
She's not good.
I'll put you in the studio. I'm so glad this one never came out. It's so embarrassing.
Because there's the other recording of the two of them, which we really have no business playing
on the
radio.
Oh, that one sucks, too. They did put that one out. That's the Bat Dance one, Scandalous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, I've always hated that one. There's so many people that are Prince fans that love that, too. I just think it's lousy.
It's interesting.
Mm. But in this one, you could tell he's just like, yeah, I'm going to have Kim sing a little bit. And then he realizes she really can't sing. And he's like, well, let's just date for a week or two.
That's kind of what happened with Paul and Linda McCartney.
Yeah.
In Wings.
Yeah, but he always brought her along.
We'll just bury her in the mix and let her play keyboard.
Prince would bring a girl to the studio and basically put him on the air. And then just like, he'd bury it. That's pretty much what's in his vault. It's all of his lost recordings of his conquests that he brought home. And he decided to record them on the air. He's like, I'm going to put you on my next single. They're like, nope, that's going right into the vault.
I was listening to...
You having trouble with the mic?
There we go with this again. I was listening to Sirius over the weekend, and they were talking about Sheena Easton.
Yeah.
And they basically made it sound like Prince like corrupted her and turned her out.
She changed her image.
She did quite a bit.
Yeah, she changed her image.
She wasn't like good little girl anymore.
She wasn't part of the morning train anymore.
No.
After Sugar Walls, you know, it was down and dirty Sheena Easton.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was pretty good. You know, she was trying to get on the funk train. And get that Minneapolis sound going in like the late 80s and early 90s. And she had an album come out, and she had Prince on like 3 of the songs, uncredited. He wrote and he also sang on them. And they were pretty good. But Sheena Easton, a wonderful, wonderful voice.
Yes.
And For Your Eyes Only, probably one of the best James Bond songs. And Morning Train, great song.
Yeah, great song.
So... I don't really...
But I love Strut. I think Strut is a great song,
Strut is a great song. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And, I think it was a little odd to see her kind of going into Prince's camp in the late 80s, but she probably had a new agent and was just like, all right, we're going to change your image a little bit there, kid.
A lot of...
make you 10 years younger.
A lot of female artists were going into Prince's camp and coming out with number one hits.
Yeah,
so,
that's
you know,
true.
Including Sinead O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor, yeah.
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 Although, I don't think she went all the way into Prince's camp the way that... other people had.
No.
I don't picture her rolling around with him.
No, I don't either. I just picture her angry.
Yeah.
I picture her in like combat boots and like a small U2 shirt.
She wasn't quite that angry.
Size small.
She wasn't quite that angry when she started out.
No. But everybody's like, she's so beautiful, beautiful eyes. It's like, that's all you see in the video. The video is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like her, you know, her singing to a camera and she starts crying. Like, oh my God. And she did it better than Prince. I have to give that to her.
She did
the song better than Prince. Prince tried to take that one back, and I'm like, dude, you gotta stop here.
Yeah.
But when you hear these earlier ones with like Glamorous Life and the Bangles and stuff, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. These came out on originals, and they're half-done songs. Some of them are completely done, but there's other ones done by, like, The Time on there and yep. The Family and a bunch of other Prince protege bands. So it's kind of fun to hear his versions of them before he sent them out to other people,
well,
too.
He was writing stuff for everybody in Minneapolis. You know, it was just yeah. like, you need a song, call Prince. I'll give you one.
He became, the Minneapolis sound was from 1984 on until at least 4 or 5 years,
yeah.
until, like, 89, 90.
And it's great
yeah.
music.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. And you can't really say, I mean, who else has had an influence like that on music in years where you have somebody that's writing a whole bunch of hits for other bands and, you know, producing other bands? It's like, it just don't happen that much anymore.
Macklemore?
Does Macklemore do that?
I think Macklemore yeah. might do that. I don't know.
Macklemore?
It's
thrift shop guy?
It's not. Yeah. yeah. It sort of became the domain of producers at a certain
yeah.
point, and songwriters got phased out. But before, I mean, that's what Paul McCartney did.
I guess you could say Jay-Z.
Like, if you were a band in London in the 60s, you could, like, go to Paul and be like, can I have a song? And he'd be like, yeah, here's another one that Joan doesn't like.
Yeah.
And he'd just throw you a song.
I loved watching that Let It Be documentary. I don't know if we ever talked about that, but, man, that was great.
That's
on
good
Disney.
Stuff.
And I think it was about a year ago, and it was around Christmas time, I think they released it, right?
Yeah.
And to see that and to see the work ethic of Paul McCartney, and how he was really holding them all together. I mean, John was just, you know, he was into Yoko and he was just goofy. And it's like he enjoyed the work, but he was very aloof.
He liked.
And he could have written a whole bunch of hits and they would have sat in his closet. You know, he never would have done anything with it if it wasn't for McCartney pushing him.
John seemed to like actually playing the music.
Yeah.
The rest of it he didn't really have any patience for.
Yeah.
You know, George just wanted to play and hang out in the clubs.
Yeah.
Ringo doesn't know what he's doing there anymore.
I think part
Other
of it, too, was George looked sad.
My job to be Ringo.
Yeah, it's my job to be Ringo. But George looked sad because he wanted to be, like, their buddy. And it's like, you know, it's like the two of them. It's John and
yeah.
Paul, like, the whole time. And Ringo's like, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just smoking cigarettes and playing the drums when they finally get a song together.
Well, Ringo's like, I get paid either way.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ringo, I think, was the only one making money out of that whole thing.
What was his number? What was his number on Let It Be? The Ringo number. What did he get? I know he got Octopus's Garden on the last on Abbey Road, but what did he get on Let It Be? I don't remember.
God, what did he get on Let It Be? I remember this.
He must have had a good one in there.
I want to say Maxwell Silver Hammer, but that's not him.
Nope, that's on Abbey Road, too.
I don't know that he has one on...
Yeah, I don't know if he does either.
On Let It Be. I don't think he does.
Hmm.
There's a song that they talk about working on with him that is Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. It had Maggie May, Let It Be, Dig It, I Mean Mine, Across the Universe, Dig a Pony, Two of Us.
Yeah.
I Got a Feeling, One After 109, Long Wind and Roan for You, Blue, which is Harrison.
Yeah.
And Get Back. Yeah, Harrison gets two.
Yeah, there's no star on that one.
Yeah, there's no Ringo
on there.
There's
two Harrisons instead.
But then again, Ringo put out like four albums after that, too, within like 3 years.
Right, but yeah. they were all written by like John, Paul, and George.
Yeah.
Like, Ringo didn't ever actually write any of his own music. They wrote the music for him.
Yeah. He had a couple, I think.
There's a great outtake from his TV special.
Yep.
Where like, you've got to watch the blooper reel for that because it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a great outtake from that where he's basically confiding in Carrie Fisher that George Harrison wrote the song You're 16, You're Beautiful, and You're Mine.
Really?
Yeah.
I can believe that.
And watching Ringo Starr sing that to Carrie Fisher, dressed up as a little 1950s schoolgirl.
Oh, right, in the Ringo special.
One of the creepiest things you'll ever see.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really wrong on so many levels.
Yeah.
Even knowing what we know about Carrie.
How long do you think we're going to get Paul McCartney for? He's 80 now, right? How old is he?
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah?
Paul's in better shape than we are.
I saw Gordon Lightfoot last year. He's like 87 years old.
Wow.
And then he had a heart attack like 2 weeks later.
Didn't we lose somebody big last week?
Yeah. Somebody died last week.
No, it was Raquel Welch. But
yeah, Raquel Welch.
There was somebody after that, wasn't there? I know Burt Bacharach died a couple of weeks ago. That's a big one.
Yeah. Jimmy Carter's almost dead, right?
Because we all... Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. He's gone into hospice.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
He's gone into hospice. We'll see. By next Wednesday, he'll be dead.
That'll take some time. Hopefully not. I mean, I like Jimmy Carter.
Well,
I didn't like him when he was president, but I've liked him since.
We can't keep him around forever, you know? It's like he's got to go the way of the dodo at one point and make some room for everybody else.
No, I know that, but, you know.
We had enough of his shenanigans.
That's a great life, and you hate to see a great life come to an end, even though it has to.
Yeah.
Nobody beats the final boss.
Yeah, I guess. You're right. All right, we're going to beat the clock. See you next week, everybody. This has been What's This? Episode 4. My name's Chris Searle. Derek Gary. Thanks for listening. It's WMFO in Medford.